Rockpodden presenteras av Sweden Rock Festival och Pistonhead alkoholfri öl.
Yes, här sitter jag med en gammal Rockpodden-gäst, Jakob Hellenrud.
Ja, här sitter jag också.
Hur är det med dig då?
Jag sitter här och har en beers med min kompis Henke från Rockpodden.
Ja, vi har ju faktiskt haft mycket kontakt sedan du var med i Rockpodden för 4 år sedan, eller?
Ja, jag skulle säga att vi kanske är bästa vänner nu.
Snudd på. Vi har gjort något skitkul alldeles nyss ju.
Ja, alltså jag har så mycket göshud fortfarande.
Ja.
Men också ett helt lugn i kroppen. Ja. Det är så här, blir jag påkörd av en buss nu så bara, så blev det med det.
Ska vi berätta vad vi har gjort?
Ja, alltså... Jag har ju fått äran att co-hosta Henkes podd idag och träffa Rival Sons kanske viktigaste medlemmar, om man får säga så, Jay och Scott.
Ja,
Få snacka lite.
Sångarna och gitarristen. Ja, jag älskar ju trummisen som heter
Mike Miley.
Ja,
men... precis. Dave Best och Mike Miley är också fantastiska.
Ja, men nej, men jag fick ju frågan om man skulle intervjua Rival Sons och du vet ju att du är sån jävla fan av dem. Och så passar det bra.
Det passar skitbra.
Så fick du hänga med?
Ja.
Mm. Är du nöjd med din insats?
Alltså, jäklar vad man har schabblat och man har gjort bort sig och pratat engelska också. Som är det är ju inte mitt första mål, om man säger så.
Nej.
Men skitsamma, jag fick hänga med Rival Sons och Henke.
Ja. Så och så fick supernöjd. Du ge dem en Children of the Sun-platta.
Ja, det lade upp snyggt. Mm.
Det kommer i slutet där avsnittet.
Ja, det är en liten cliffhanger.
Ja. Ska vi släppa över till avsnittet?
Ja.
Nej, vi ska också säga att det börjar ju ganska länge va med
bara Scott,
precis. Scott Holiday
innan The Preacher kommer in.
Ja,
en helt lila kostym
lite senare
och cowboy boots.
Ja, men nu kör vi över till avsnittet.
Yes.
Du lyssnar på Rockpodden. Scott Holiday och Jay Buchanan är dagens gäster. Jag heter Henke Brannerud
och jag Jakob Hellenrud.
Vi önskar dig en god
lycklig
lyssning.
Resa.
Skål. So Scott Holiday, welcome to Rockpodden.
Happy to be here with you guys.
So nice to have you in Sweden.
Beautiful weather you have.
Yeah, you have California weather.
That was me.
Almost.
I brought that.
We appreciate it, totally.
It's no problem.
How's your day going?
Good. Yeah, good so far. Long travel to get here. I traveled yesterday, and it's like nearly 10 hours. It's like 9 hours, 45 minutes. We traveled, me and Jay sat and there was a middle seat between us, but then the middle seat guy came.
Oh,
so I went, yeah, I'm just going to move to the middle. So I sat 10 hours in a middle seat.
What do you do for 10 hours? Cause you used to long flights, I guess.
I've done a bunch of long flights.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep things positive. It was lovely.
But do you have a trick to go through it?
How to get through it?
Yeah.
There's no trick. You're just
I know
sitting.
A lot of people that do a couple of fast drinks and then
I don't drink anymore. That used to be a great trick. Pass out. The guy next to me, who was a cool guy, he was actually surfing in my hometown. So I like this guy next to me, but he did the trick. He had like at least a 6-pack of beer in a short amount of time. He was passed out.
It's perfect.
Sleeping all over me.
But nowadays you don't have a trick.
I don't drink now.
And you don't have a trick to get by it.
Netflix or...
Get cozy. Do your best to get cozy. Put some kind of show on and try to sleep a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all you can do.
Yeah. But since you're kind of endless touring the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, but what do you prefer? Flights or long bus drives?
Oh, well, the bus is great. We have a bunk. You have a lounge. Everyone's hanging out. Throw a movie on. You can go in your bunk and go to sleep.
Yeah.
So bus, for sure.
So you try to take the bus as much as you can.
Yeah. We'll talk when we're in the PJ. When we're in the private jet, we can compare apples to apples a little bit more. Yeah, and then I might be like, oh, private jet, of course. It's way better.
PJ.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that term.
Yeah.
But you're still such good friends in the band, so you can like have just one jet when you're going on tour and one bus or...
No, I'm going to need a private PJ.
Yeah.
And a private bus. No, we're all...
After this year.
Dude, we're all super close. Even our crew, we're really close with everybody. We're still crew on our bus. We don't do a band bus, so we're all together. We all get along. We all hang out. We all love each other. It's a big love fest.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Great. And the same kind of guys that's been around for... ages.
Yeah, I mean, our crew changes a little bit, but I think mostly we're lucky. Even the new people we find, they're usually really good guys. And I'll just say we're a good group. It's a good group of dudes, man. The guys that I work with, they're good people.
Yeah, and I mean, the band is the same also since 13.
Yeah, I mean, the only member we ever replaced is our bass player who left. He didn't want a tour. He just couldn't handle it.
Yeah, and that's, what do you say?
Understandable.
I can understand that this is not for everybody.
Totally. So to can
tour, like. Yeah, because like from Pressure and Time from 2011, you haven't stopped tour like anyway.
Yeah, you know, and he quit after, towards the end of Head Down is when Robin left. And we were working a lot. That was like where we worked the most. Like we barely came off the road, you know, because we were really kind of getting things off the ground. You know what I mean? So I think he was fresh out of music school when he joined the band. He was a music school guy.
Okay.
And we were his first real band. He was he's a phenomenal bass player. Ridiculous.
Yeah, totally.
So, it was lovely to have him with the group and make some records with them. Really great playing.
So straight from the school to...
Yeah, and I think he just learned
after
a couple few records. You know, I think he learned after a few good years of touring. Like, yeah, I can't. I don't like it. I don't want to be somewhere different every night. That's like a weird feeling. And he made the point at the time, because we're like, our star is rising. It's going to become more comfortable. Like, this isn't like... We're not on the downturn. We're on the upturn right now. You should probably stay. It's probably going to get better.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, even if it was the PJ, that's just not what I want. Even if it is like we're having our own buses, I just don't like the transientness, the like displaced feeling of being somewhere different every night. So it's at the time it was really hard to let him go.
Yeah.
And to hear like, oh, we're losing a member.
Yeah.
We got dates. I got dates on the board right now. Like we're like, we had a festival. We had a festival booked with 50 Cent and us in Norway. The most weird festival, but the coolest thing ever. So I'm like, that's cool. He's leaving before that. We had a tour with Sammy Hagar booked, like a string of dates with him, like good dates, fun dates. Yeah. I'm friends with this guy. Whole band great, but he just bounced out. We were like, don't you just want to finish the dates that we booked with you? No,
but he didn't even want to do that.
No, I think he just grew tired of the whole thing. So there you go. But the beautiful thing out of all that is we got our dear Dave Bestie, and he's a lovely fit.
How did you find him?
He was a friend. The other guys in the band too had been friends with him even longer than me, but he was playing with one of our really close friends, Jameson Burt, who we've taken on tour, who we love and is wonderful. He was playing in his band at the time.
Okay.
And we just kind of all knew each other. Believe it or not, we didn't even audition people. We just, we lost the guy and we went, I think we know who we want. We should go hit him up.
That's
and,
great. It's kind of unique for such a big band.
We actually had submissions from all over the world. People from all over in different countries saying they'll come audition on their own dime. Tons. It would have been a line around the block if we actually did auditions. We didn't do auditions.
No.
Yeah.
But I know you stick together, but do you ever have substitutes?
No.
No.
Oh, wait. We have had drum substitutes, now that you mention it. I'm trying to think of in what... The only real we had a drummer friend of ours sit in, our friend Scott Devour sat in for Miley for a private gig once. That's a tough band for substitutes. Let me just say, like what Miley is doing on the drums it's not like every drummer. No. It's kind of very individual.
It's
and
more like no other drummer, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, I would definitely say that too. He's particular. When I found him, one of our mutual friends turned him on to me, and we were love at first sight, love at first play. So when he came to play with me, I was like, this guy's interesting. I'd given him a set of songs. He didn't really learn the songs, and I was still in love with his playing. It was just like, this is great. We just jammed. We just messed around, and it was like here. Like we were able to play together and look at each other and laugh.
And was this with the Black Summer Crush? Or,
yeah, exactly. That's when I was building that band.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Which eventually became this band. So I had actually just hired another drummer at that point. My friend, I won't mention his name. He probably wouldn't like it. But I hired another drummer the day before Miley came down. And I went, the other guy's drums were in there. And he's kind of a guy, this other drummer. Like he's been on big records that I love. And he's a guy that I love and he's a great player too, but I just knew this drummer is great. So it's hard to fill position. Yeah. We barely can do it with Miley. I mean, I think we can get along just because some of the other materials with another bass player, we could probably do some stuff with another bass player if we had to in a pinch. I wish anybody great luck doing what I'm doing just because it's very nuanced in particular. Yeah. Not that I'm like greatest player on planet Earth.
No, but have a very specific,
to what I do.
Yeah. Unique my song,
own, yeah. Yeah, it's my own thing. There's many tunings and textures, yeah. And best of luck, anyone. Yeah. Take a swing at it.
Keep the band together.
And obviously, the easiest person to replace is Jay. Yeah. So we replace him all the time.
But was it the same when you found Jay? Like you knew you had to have him
before I met Jay. I had found him online. He had like a little playlist thing going, and I just listened to like 15 seconds of a song and paused it. You know, like when you hear something that like does something to you, like, oh my God. It was like that for me. Like, all right, I got to get rid of this singer that I have. Although he's a great singer, he's not right for me. I got to find somebody. Somebody turn me on to this guy. That's me typing, look him up. All right. Oh, I think I've heard of this guy. Satan is a Woman, let's play this track. And it's him playing acoustic. And I'm like, oh my God. Like the first few words, like, oh fuck. And then into the first verse. And that's it. Pause it. Oh shit. This is the guy I've been looking for like 8 years. I've been looking for this guy. And it was really affecting to me, like emotionally. Like, Jesus Christ, I've been looking for this voice and all this music I've been making for years. And I was married at the time in a long-term relationship, and she knew I'd been looking for this guy. And I just yelled down to her, get up here right now. She ran up, and I go, just listen to this. And she's like, what? And I go, just listen to this. And I played it, and same thing, 15 seconds, she cried.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, she was like, dude, you've been looking for this guy for like 8 years. And I'm like, I can't believe it. I can't fucking believe it. So I just went, I got to call Miley. Miley was already in the group. I just went, I got to call Miley right away. I called him and I go, I have our singer, dude. I got the guy that's going to be in our band. I don't know where he lives or where he's from or if he even knows I exist. I'm sure he doesn't. But I told Miley, his name's Jay Buchanan. Miley laughed because Jay Buchanan was one of Miley's dear friends. Oh, and Miley had played with Jay Buchanan. And he's like, he lives in Long Beach. And I'm like, fucking, that's great. He doesn't live in like New Hampshire. Or Sweden. Yeah. Like, I don't want to fly somebody over. Yeah. So I had to pester Miley over a bunch of weeks to get Jay to get a hold of me. Jay has a whole solo career. Miley said, he's not going to do the band. He's not that guy. He's not a guy that comes and auditions for a band. He's not the guy that's like joins a band. He does his own shit. He's a writer. He knows how good he is, and he's just going to go do his own shit, you know? And I went, nah, dude, nah, no, no. It's not the ego in me. It was the, I don't want to say fate or anything too mystic or whatever, but it was like that. It was a fate situation for me when I heard the voice. You ever feel like everything lines up, right?
Yeah.
You ever, like a deja vu, like a feeling where everything slots in the right way and you're like, oh, that's it. That's my decision. And it's like really clear. It's a gift when that happens, because that only happens every so often in life even.
No, but it's so funny. All those things you mentioned, I recognize them even though it's not my band.
Yeah.
I like totally remember the first time I've ever heard you. And just from the drum intro from Prussian Times, like, yeah, this band I love. And I know I texted all my friends and said, look at this new band. Like, they're still coming out great bands. Because I have a lot of friends that only listen to...
old bands.
Yeah, the same thing they listened to when they were like 16.
Yeah, and it was the same for me, actually, with the Pressure on Time song. Like, I knew this is the kind of music I want to play, I want to listen to. And it's such an amazing thing and a gift for all of us, I think, that you kind of carry the rock on your shoulders. And I think it's amazing for us.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
And also, the crying part, the first time I saw you, was like 2012 or 11. I think I've been crying to music like 3 times. But one of them is...
That's nice, man. Yeah. I want to see this honors me, because when we're touched by something, it's not like you feel a responsibility. It's not like, see, I made you cry with my music, man. It's not like that. It's what happens is we are a conduit to something nice that's happening.
Yeah,
we have a symbiosis in the relationship. It was the moment. It wasn't just us. It was your moment.
Yeah, I know.
And
I know.
And so many people that are attending, they're having those moments. Yeah. It's not our fault. Those are their moments that our song luckily gets to affect them with their moment.
And it still does. When I was crying, it was to Face of Light.
Yeah.
And I listened to that song this morning and I still was like, not crying, but I was feeling weak.
Remembering.
Yeah, because since that moment, that always been my song. And you still play it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We wrote that one very quickly. The funny thing is the melodies. Look at the hey Jay,
here he comes.
Hey Jay, we're gonna just touch. He was saying just on the topic of what we're talking about, that that when he saw us play years ago and we did Face of Light, it emotionally struck him. He's only cried at music a few times.
I was crying like a baby.
Yeah, so
that happened like one or two.
We were
times
talking about Face of Light a little bit. I was going to say the way that for me the song starts, I was thinking we made this song really quick, but the way for me the song starts is I had some parts that I had written and recorded into my phone some music, and it was the main melody, that main like music box melody. Yeah. And sometimes that's all it is. I don't even need all the chords. For me, sometimes I know like, oh, this little thing right here, this is special. This is a little jewel, you know? Yeah. And we can write around this, but this will be something special every time it happens, you know? And so that's what I had when we started. I had a few parts, but specifically that. And that's what I shared with Jay. And then Jay had another song too that we did, the chocolate and peanut butter.
I had a chorus and a verse.
Please.
Sorry.
Thank you. Welcome to Rock.
He was talking into the can.
Jay Buchanan.
He was talking into the can.
Now with the microphones.
I had a chorus and a verse that I had written while I was in the studio making another record previously that year, and it worked completely over what he was doing. It worked perfectly. The melody, like it all worked, and I think that was. That was an easy one. Like, it just came together.
It was easy, but it was also quickly. Dave Cobb like was doing such great things. We were doing such great things together. And then things were coming together so quickly, and he was in such a flow with his recording sound and stuff and the room sounds we were getting. And it was quick. It was fast and really great. And to me, from my memory, as soon as that song went down, it was like there was a feeling for us. Like,
I can get through the day, have a date with the moon. It's how I spend all my worthless time on the sand, thinking that my ship will be coming in soon. Look at these hands, they've been in gloves for years. It's how I spend all my worthless rounds in the ring, hoping that the other guy'll disappear. But you and your friends,
I remember us flushing it out. We were in that very uncomfortable control room that he had.
I love that place.
That studio.
Silver Lake.
Yeah, very, very tiny control room with just this flat seat with some bookshelves right behind us. But we were sitting right there. It was like, oh, shit, this is really going to work.
Full-blown circa 1971. Like perfect replica studio with the soundboard with the holes in it and just everything. It was like he basically built a replica studio. It was really cool.
Yeah. But how much influence does Dave Cobb have on your records? Is he like a ghost producer? Does he write any songs?
He doesn't write the songs ever.
No,
but he writes with us.
Yeah,
he like will contribute a part. He will pick up percussion. He'll pick up an acoustic guitar. If he like kind of co-wrote a bit with us, he'll like, we're arranging it and I'll play this part, you know, but
he's got a real strong, like super steady right hand. And like for rhythm guitar, timekeeping, as we're fleshing stuff out, he's really good with all of that. But no, Dave, his production style, I mean, God, by the time Lightbringer comes out, that's going to be 9 records with Cobb. And that's insane.
I think we have more records than the Beatles and Led Zeppelin.
We're the same guy, yeah.
Almost
that's amazing.
A member of the band, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, when we're making records, yes. Yeah. You know, when we're making records, it's we work in there. He knows us. We have a verbal and mental shorthand together because we've just created and recorded so much with each other.
Yeah, great. And now you mentioned Lightbringer. That's the next album. That's coming out in November.
I'm not sure. We haven't set a date, but it's going to be sometime in the fall.
Yeah.
And that's really
October is what we've been told. We don't have a date for that, but I believe it will be in October.
Okay.
But before that,
you will release an album now in June.
Yeah, that's right. We've got Dark Fighter coming out on June 2nd.
That's kind of unique.
It is. I think that it's a product of making a statement. For us, making an overall statement that was maybe just too big for one album and recognizing that there was room for a call and a response between these two collections, because Dark Fighter, very much, it's a defensive, keep the wolf on the other side of the door sort of a thing. Because you guys remember all of the bullshit that we were going through during the lockdown, through the pandemic and everything. And I know that you guys did things differently here.
Yeah.
With like the herd immunity, like initially, I know it was different, but for us in the United States, we went through a lot, and I know everybody did. I know that everybody was losing loved ones and like all of that. But for us, we went through a real identity crisis in the United States during those 2 years, so there was a lot to write about. So the collection itself ended up being very large, and with that first statement during the lockdown and during the isolation, just not letting the wolf in, not letting the darkness in, just keep it out there. okay, because shit is getting really dark. Just keep it there. And then finally on the Lightbringer, as the name indicates, it's really about illuminating that which the darkness had taken. It's more about illuminating those things and illuminating everything that you can. So we partitioned it into two statements because we felt like that the songs were going to be recognized in their own right, and that by making two statements that way, it would help the entire collection much more than just making one long record.
Yeah. And it felt like, I can only really speak to our own country, but the whole world, but I think had its own turmoil happening at that time, certainly. But our country just felt sick. So really, for us, we did the best we could to create the best medicine we know about, you know? And to me, those albums are...
But did you guys meet in the band?
What?
Did you guys meet in the band?
You mean get together?
To talk about it?
You got together?
Oh, yeah.
No, you mean that we like to create?
Yeah, of course.
You wasn't sitting online like having...
we did both.
Well, we did a ton. I mean, and it's really something. Company Universal Audio was kind enough to outfit us with some of their interfaces and their plugins, and you know they released a new recording platform back in 2020 called Luna.
Yeah.
And I think you know they were helping musicians out during the pandemic because this is a really brilliant move and very generous move on their part, you know. But it allowed Scott and I a real time way to interface with each other, even though I was out in Tennessee, he's out in California, to write and be able to share the same session with each other, to be drawing from the exact same assets on the very same recording platform, but to be thousands of miles apart from each other, to be able to send, okay, here's what I did, I'm working in this, or send each other sessions so we could see exactly, you know, I've got this part to send to you, okay, so I'm going to work on this part. Working remotely like that was surprisingly intuitive because we were drawing from the same vocabulary on a technical sense, and so our sharing the creative aspect of it ended up being really easy because of that, you know. And so it's like through the use of this growing technology, it made this isolation much more, you know, palpable for us.
Was it more like countable?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, like the first records when you like came to the studio with no material at all. Compared to that, what do you think is the best way to do a record? Is this like more the new Rival Sons thing, or do you think you'll ever go back to like the thing when you like recorded the stuff?
I'll say even on this record, we improvised some stuff and we wrote songs in studio. And I will also mention that a lot of times those songs we just came in where we say we had nothing may not be like all of us had nothing. Be like, I had a bunch of shit. I brought a bunch of shit in that I had been working on that I didn't share. You know, Dave Cobb tapped into me and said, I need this. And I went, okay, well, I have some ideas. But it becomes its whole own new thing. Like Jay's going to tap in, like he even said when we did Face of Light. That was off the cuff. But I tapped into something I had recorded. I was going to mention, I want to mention that to you too, that because you were really touched by it. Yeah. But that song I had written with my children in the room, I have the recording in there. I can play it for you where I wrote it. My kids were this big and you can hear them playing in the room. Ugh. It's insane. And then he wrote a song about his son. It is so connected that I wrote a thing about my children playing in the room, and he wrote a song about his child being the face of light. That when we made it, it's like, dude, that is like touching. It's not that the melody indicated that.
Yeah.
It's just by chance that that's what happened, you know?
So not a lyric guy, sorry, but the sentence, look at these hands, they've been in gloves for years, is like one of the best ever.
Sounds good. Like you're a lyric guy, bro.
I'm not, but that one just talked to me, straight to me. I guess I made my total own meaning of it. I have no idea what you meant, but I know what it means to me.
I meant what you mean.
Yeah.
That's right.
I bring it with me.
Yeah, that's the way it works. That song is.
I'm so happy.
That's
to
the beauty of in the good words, yeah. In the good lyrics, that they translate for a lot of different people,
yeah.
In a lot of different ways.
That's and great.
They touched.
We have to change subject. Otherwise, I'm going to start crying
that's
again.
All right, man.
I love. No, let's stay here.
Yeah,
let's stay here.
No, I'm really curious about your endless touring parts. We talked about it a little before Jake came. No, but just how do you cope with it? For once, how do you keep your voice in a good shape?
Try not to yell anybody on days off.
But you don't have any days off.
Yeah, no, I mean...
So it works perfectly.
Yeah.
Does all this yelling on stage.
Yeah, that's
For
right.
For the most part, I mean, look, it's a crazy schedule and everything, but at the same time, like, okay, to address the physical nature of it, like, I like to go running all the time. I try to take care of myself and get lots of sleep. Stay hydrated, for fuck's sake. Stay, like, drink water. Drink water and eat good food. And those are the main ingredients. I'll over-sing and I'll abuse my voice. And I know that I'm not really good at taking it easy. You know, but when we're on stage, how do I not, you know? How could I possibly take it easy?
There's three J's, by the way. There's three vocal J's. If you go to enough of our shows, you might meet all three. There's the beginning of a tour where the voice is really strong, can do anything, and that voice goes pretty quick. Like really quick. Like a week. Bye. It's gone. Then you got Jay's gonna die. Jay can't even talk. Jay literally doesn't talk. His voice goes out so bad that he's miming on the bus. You know, can't use his voice, not going to even speak. And then he's still singing hard every night, and then no more talking. The voice is rough. He's got to mess with lines, got to push through it. Then he keeps pushing through it. Then you get the third J. Then that's pretty much the best one. The one that pushes through. The voice is rough. It's hard. It's hot. And it can do a lot. It can do
that's
all the
J that can lift cars up with one hand.
that's where it goes. But Super that J. is also very temporary. And if you don't keep that thing, you don't keep that machine greased, that machine goes away goes back to J number one or J number two sometimes.
Yeah, I have to keep singing.
Yeah.
Yep. I just have to keep
singing. How many canceled shows do you have the last 10 years?
Very minimal. You can't count
the
pandemic.
I think we have 3 canceled shows like ever.
I have stopped shows.
That is so impressive.
There's a couple shows that I've stopped because his voice was so bad that I was like, I mean, I like want to have a career after this show.
You're going to hurt yourself.
I'm not doing it. Yeah, like I'm over it. My friend's hurting, you know. And
but you took that decision.
Yeah, because he'll keep going.
Yeah.
He'll sing through it and just go, no, one more song. Fine. One more song. And I'm like, dude.
Adrian.
Yeah.
One more song.
Yeah.
But do you ever feel like you're punishing yourself in the studio,
yes.
like making these insane melodies?
Yeah.
And then have to copy that every
There's
night.
There's a specific song that you can hear it really good on. If you go to the EP and listen to Get What's Coming, there we don't have any tracks where he sounds like that, but his voice was pretty trashed.
I sound like that dog that just barked all through the night.
Yeah. I just listened to it the other day because I was working on the rig and I put that song up and it's like, oh damn, that's right. Yeah. It's
yeah, exactly.
It's like, holy shit, dude, we kept that beat up. It's great. But
I guess that's one of the ingredients that the fans love also. You don't safe.
Yeah.
You do it.
I think that you gotta play like you're not gonna live to see tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like every night. For me, like vocally, what I get to do is so fun. Like it's like It's so fun. And it's just such a great feeling, and it's such a freedom. And to not use it up while it's there, it's just like, I couldn't imagine not giving everything. But you have to play like you're never going to play again. You're never going to get the opportunity. And I don't know what's going to happen. I could get hit by a car, be taken in my sleep. Like, I don't know. But all I know is I'm up on stage and I'm getting to sing right now, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to fuck like there's no tomorrow. I never know. It's like, because you don't know.
Yeah. This sounds great.
Yeah, there are no guarantees.
So I don't know how many. I'm trying to think of.
I'm thinking like three.
Like canceled because we couldn't play?
I couldn't sing.
You couldn't sing?
How many?
Like three?
I don't even remember that many.
I remember there's having a couple to we stop had to
come
show.
Off. Yeah, there's a couple we had to come off deck. I know those.
Mm-hmm.
One in the UK.
Yeah.
One was the MR, WMR and we barbecue sang,
but we
show.
still played over half of that. And we still played over half.
No, we only played a few.
Yeah.
In England. It was only like a couple few
oh,
songs.
Oh, no. In England, yeah. England was like two songs. That was it.
Yeah.
That was it, but like I don't know, just a couple.
Yeah, we don't cancel shows, man. The pandemic,
impressive, I think.
Pandemic, we had to cancel shit.
Yeah, but that doesn't count.
It doesn't count.
No.
Yeah, well, we did a European tour last summer, and I got COVID in the middle of it. Did we cancel one or two?
I think we canceled like three shows.
Yeah, because I was dead, trapped in Ostinda.
Oh, so you got sick.
I got super sick. And we keep the bus at a cozy 51 degrees or something. Mm.
I wish that were true.
Dude, it's Arctic. It's so cold. And I got the COVIDs and just felt like, I was like achy and thinking like, God, can I just push through? There's no chance I'm going to push through. So I just pulled up. So that was doesn't count, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm impressed.
But earlier you were saying, replacing members for subs. So Miley got sick on the US leg of that COVID tour. It was a Pressure and Time 10th anniversary tour. Miley got sick like right after we started, and we did not cancel any shows. We actually, my guitar tech, Ben Bowers, stepped up the morning of the show.
Until I got sick. Miley got me sick because we go running together.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll have dinner together. And he hadn't been all that safe.
Yeah.
We were supposed to be quarantining and not going out.
Like, I'm not supposed to go to the bar and hang out with a fan?
Yeah, well, he
went. Wait
a
minute.
Miley went out to hang out with fans and didn't tell me. So he and I went and had some lunch and went running together and stuff like that. And then like 2 days later, God, you know, I had to miss my son's first birthday because of that. Son of a that old so-and-so.
Yeah.
But we got through it. That was a crazy tour. But yeah, we had Scott's guitar tech, Ben Bowers from the UK. He played drums for us.
Ballsy. Yeah. He stepped up. Ballsy. My guitar tech is a drummer, and he said, "Yeah, mate, give me a minute. Get in the headphones, and I'll like listen to it. I can do it. I can do it." And I'm like, "You can do a headline set tonight in Austin."
Is he the guy doing the shaker also?
No, that's not him.
That's Matthias back in the old days. Is probably who you saw. But anyway, he stepped up. It didn't sound like Miley.
That's the actual drum tech.
Drum tech. Yeah. But he did a good job, Ben.
Yeah, he did a great job.
He did a really... We got through a show, and then Ben ended up doing another... How many?
I don't know, four or five shows. Something like that, yeah. Like a lot. What, the entire
then
time.
Then we lost Miley on a European thing. Like Miley had to leave or something, and Ben stepped up again.
Oh, he was having a baby.
That's it. Miley had a baby, so he went home to have his baby. Good. Thank God he did. And Ben said, yeah, we don't have to cancel the shows. I'll play if you guys want to do them. And we did it, and we played with the Chili Peppers. Huge festival. And Ben got to hang out with Chad Smith and everything. Yeah. Needless to say, he's not my tech anymore. He's ready to play in a band.
Yeah. Yeah, because he must be like the hardest man working behind the stage also, because you kind of switch guitar between every song.
My tech job is a tough job, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of guitars, a lot of tunings, a lot to keep focused with.
Were you able to keep the crew during the pandemic, or did they find other jobs?
Crew changes. You know, we've had some crew changes, yeah. But
nobody's on retainer or anything. All of our guys work all the time with other people too.
Yeah. Okay. I get it. But how do you do to remain friends during touring?
Oh,
the band?
Yeah.
I think that's. I don't know. It's not.
We're
it's
friends,
not,
man.
Yeah, it's like we're. Yeah.
You never argue. Friends.
Oh, yeah, of course.
About what? It's a real relationship. It's just, you guys have brothers?
Yeah.
It's just exactly like brothers. That's it. It's like, except probably a little more respectful, but it's just like having brothers. Like, it's, you know, you get in tiffs.
Yeah. You argue.
You say stupid shit to each other, but you're careful, you know, and your best, when you're your best self, you're careful. We respect each other. Yeah. We love each other.
And it still happens to where you will say dumb shit, but there's also going to be the time where it's like, okay, I'm just going to walk away right now, or I'm going to say some dumb shit.
We're a little more careful because we aren't actually brothers. Like, when you're brothers, you can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
So we're a little more careful. We're also all adults with families and stuff, and we all recognize each other, what each other is putting into this. Yeah. Everyone sacrifices. This is good advice for any other band people. Just going to act like I got something to say. When you can see the people you work with, you can see what they're going through and see their struggle and see what they're compensating with and what they're giving. It makes it a lot easier to love them and respect them and be cool, you know?
I think that's that's right. And you learn to, if you're going to blow your top, just go do something else.
Yeah.
Just go divert. And just go sit on it for a couple of minutes.
You know, when someone unloads on you, you got to kind of roll with the punches. We've all been unloaded on, and we've all unloaded on everybody. It's gone every direction. You know what I mean? It's just what it is.
And it's kind of necessary for the band to continue being
friends. I mean, you'd have to be like emotionally stunted if you didn't do that stuff.
People get frustrated, and for Scott and I, what our roles are in this whole thing, people get frustrated, and you got to give a grown man a voice and room to lose their shit a little bit, because it's a lose your shit a little bit world. And you got to give people a wide berth when they need it. And you got to recognize and have the maturity to just let someone spin out a little bit and not take it personally. Even if you do get pissed, you got to remember, like, you look at the hard time they're having and you go like, oh fuck, I know what that feels like. Just give them a minute and just let them spin out, you know.
There's a lot of compromise in a band project, and the better the artists are, the better people you're working with, more talented they are or whatever, the more compromise there is, because it's everybody's got something to say. Everyone's going to make their own statement. And then there's a kind of a collective thing we're all doing that we're all contributing to. So it's like almost unnatural if you think about all the other art forms in the world besides dance, like painting or sculpting or writing. Those are singular art forms, you know what I mean? And even for me and Jay writing together, like, both of us are capable of just writing our own songs pretty much, you know? So there's compromise anytime you collaborate with another artist. There's going to be conflict when there's compromise like that. There's going to be like, everybody wants their thing to come through, or, you know, you want to make your point. So I think as long as you're mindful and, like Jay's saying, give people their space. I think that's how we've done it.
That's how you got to do it, you know, and just be slow to wind up. I think that's something that Scott and I both actually do have in common, is to actually let something really get under your skin. There's certain shit I know for him that will get like, okay, I got to be careful.
Yeah.
Even if you're in a bad mood, and he knows with me too. It's like, you got to remember how, like, what your brother's buttons are. And like, look, you can press any of the other buttons, just not those ones.
We have a good group. We have a good group of people. Yeah. Our crew and the band. We have good people.
Mm, great.
Yeah.
The future. Do you still have like goals you want to?
No, we've accomplished everything. Fulfill. This interview's over.
Yeah.
I have so many goals.
Yeah.
So many.
We're in a band. We have lofty goals, man.
Yeah, but I mean, you achieved a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
on good days it feels that way. Then on other days it's like I think that part of being an artist is just having that unrequited thing where it's like, what the fuck am I doing? Is what I'm creating any good? Am I being real? Am I really myself? Am I being authentic? Or where's our career going? Just all of that, all of those things that I think that in the end they end up being, it's healthy. It's a healthy insecurity that comes every now and then. And then other days you just feel strong, like Bruce Lee walking down a dark alley, you know, and everything feels all right. But then I think that for the future, I do know this. I feel like with this collection that we really just threw a bunch of the convention that I think we leaned on, we threw that out so that we could really go into an uncharted territory, you know? And I know that we feel good about it because Scott and I have talked about it a whole bunch. And I just know that wherever we're going to go from here, that it's going to be something different, you know? It'll be something different.
We're still on a very simple level. There's still like financial goals and not delusions of grandeur, but visions of grandeur and like building it up, playing to more people. But if I'm honest, man, when you tell me that story of a song affecting you like that, that's a goal. That's like good for me. That's like how I feel. Like if we're playing to people, and I think if it's more focused and we're directly affecting more people like that on the regular, that's a goal. To lift people up, to lift more people up, to affect more people like that. That to me, at this point in my career, that's where the gratification is for me. It's not going to be in the dollar. It just isn't, man. The gratification for me is in the raw emotional effectiveness on people's hearts. How that's working on people, whether it's a dirty rock song and making them feel loose and excited, or emotional songs that make people cry and feel things. That's cool. That's a real way to make art, to affect people. You know, that's a goal.
Yeah.
To grow that.
But yeah. Good art. Just want to make good art.
Great. But usually most of the bands I interview, they like still trying to get more people to listen to them. Or do at least hear what they do. But in your case, I mean, pretty much everybody on earth that likes rock and roll, they've heard you.
What world is this guy living in? Because I want to move there.
No, I think everybody's heard
it. Let's move to Stockholm.
Everybody's heard the song of you. If you go to rock festival, everybody have heard you.
Well, like with what Scott just touched on right there. Like the...
thank you.
We have... I think that Rival Sons is a great band. And the more that we do it, I recognize that we have a unique voice within this sometimes worn out, trite, and very tired genre. And I feel that with where we're trying to come from, I feel that we succeed a good part of the time in creating something unique and purveying our own style to that end. I think that... I look at the landscape and I think, well, we actually could, Rival Sons maybe could be a household name. Maybe we could be that band that headlines and that headlines the arena. I see that in our future because we're still dipping the wick, the making the candle that gets thicker and more illuminating with each time. And that's what's happened, you know, every time we go in there to make a record and every time we go out on tour, it's not for nothing, and that we are making an impact. And I know for us, we'll be out on the road, and it's like we want to see that. We want to see the fruits of our labors, and we want to have that success right now. But it's also a trickle down thing, that accumulative exposure. I would like to see us headlining the arenas. I would like to have that.
Absolutely.
I would like to have that many of our fans that are such a great fan base, people that feel that way during the songs,
I guess that's kind of what I'm saying,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's like I want to have those 20,000 people all in one place to feel that. Because I know what a few thousand of us headline, I know what that feels like, and it feels really special. So maybe to have 20,000 of them, I want to know what that feels like.
You know, I agree with that, of course. This is something we talk about. And the second a band gets too complacent or comfortable with where they're at, it's kind of the kiss of death. I think it's a healthy thing to want to grow and want to like continue to build up and become bigger, play to more people. I mean, if you've watched the making of Dark Side, Pink Floyd's very clear, very direct about why they did the band. If we didn't want to make more money, we would have broke this band up years ago. We're doing it to get way richer. Yeah. We want to be rich and have everything we want. I'm not saying that, but I would definitely, there's financial goals and there's goals to play to bigger groups. But at the heart of it, and I know it sounds high-minded and people will hear this and say, bullshit, he's lying. He's full of shit. He's talking about the money they want to make. They want to be big. Yeah. I am learning that even if it's only 500 or 5,000 or 10,000 or whatever it is, whatever it becomes, the feeling of once we're on deck and playing and affecting 500 or 5,000 or 50,000, I feel it's really similar. It's really similar in that way that you can feel it affecting people and that we're doing the same kind of job.
But from my, and I guess you're also, Jacob, from our point of view, you are that band. Like,
bless you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say
if you don't feel that way, you will. I hope you will feel it in a short amount of time.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I didn't grow up with like Led Zeppelin or anything. I'm too young, I guess.
You grew up with these
guys. I grew up with Rival Sons and Greta Van Fleet. Yeah. And I'm really proud of that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's why we brought you here today. I'm so happy. He's not used. I used to do this myself, but today I brought Jacob because I know he loves you. And he's such a great guy. And I have a great band also. And you will not be shy. You will give these guys...
Who's your band? Throw a pump up. What do you got?
Children of the Sun, it's called.
All right. And
nice.
Bring the CDs. And while you do that, do you have any other Swedish bands you listen to?
Humongous fan of a band that broke up called Dungen. I don't think they're still together.
Dungen, yeah.
They get back together and do things. Thank you, Vinyl, Children of the Sun. Yeah, what's up now? Great. This is beautiful.
Nice. That's great.
This is beautiful. Looks really good. Yeah, Dungen. I've loved Dungen for a long time now.
Soundtrack
of Our Lives is amazing.
Oh, current Swedish bands. I mean,
Kalle's. What's his offshoot band? The guitar player from Dungen did a band called the.
What's his name? Kalle.
Kalle is the guitar player.
Yeah, but what's
the band is called.
Check it up. We can edit it.
I'm going to look it up because I don't want to, like.
I'm a big fan of Ellen from Blues Pills.
Oh,
I think she's just incredible.
Ellen's great.
She's a
friend. Oh, yeah. We have to hit Ellen
she's
back.
Great.
Yeah, I know. And so, yeah.
We're saying it here. Yeah. She hit us up for some collabo stuff.
And so I think Ellen's incredible. But also Amazon. You ever check them out?
Amazon. Yeah. The Amazing.
A bit more indie.
AMASON. It's a fucking great band. Amazing records, man.
I love it that you come and...
Let
me tell you about your country now.
Yeah.
Okay,
so I do a podcast about Swedish music.
This other band is called The Amazing, and we're leaving out like a really obvious one, too.
ABBA.
I'm not a big ABBA guy.
Oh, shit, I am.
I know. No, Pele Almquist.
The Hives,
man.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dude, when The Hives dropped, I felt like... I know they got popular, but I felt like they got popular just because it was catchy and fun.
That's why people get popular.
Ja, om det var någon som tyckte att det var ett abrupt slut på förra veckans avsnitt så var det här ännu mer abrupt. Jag vet inte riktigt vad som hände, men vi tackade och sa hej och tog i hand och kramades i alla fall. Men ja, någonting hände där. Hur som, sjukt trevligt var det ju, det hörde ni. Vi skrattade ju hela tiden och grinade en liten skvätt nästan. Stort tack Jakob Hellenrud från Children of the Sun. Grymt kul att du hakar med på den här inspelningen. Jag är helt säker på att både Jay och Scott sitter hemma och spinner eran vinyl för fullt. Vad ska de annars göra? kul också med lite musiktips här på slutet. Det är ju svinkul när amerikanerna kommer hit och bjussar på lite svenska musiktips. Amazon har jag aldrig hört talas om. Det var inte riktigt rock, men svinbra. Och så har vi mer, Dungen och The Amazing. Och sen såklart, sist men inte minst, Elin och Bluespins. Det är ju de vi lyssnar lite på här i bakgrunden. Och jag håller helt med Jay. Elin är bäst. Ni är också bäst som har lyssnat. Stort tack för det. Ha nu en grym vecka, så hörs vi nästa torsdag. Tack och hej.
Of you for the episode before we leave, before we got kicked out.
You can stay as long as you want.
So anyways, check out Amazon. It's a great band.
Of us together, you want to be in?
I'm not want to be in. I just want to have you two. And then maybe one with Jacob. This is a guest-focused, believe it or not, but it's a guest. The guests are in focus in this podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, come here.
Thank you, guys. It was really nice talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah.
We'll come to see you play some
songs tonight, right? At the Live Nation office.
Oh, yeah, you're coming tonight?
Yeah.
Okay, cool, man.
Totally.
See you guys tonight.
Take care.
Bye.
Stay hydrated, for fuck's sake.